Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, October 9th, 2017. Former political detainees like IGAD's decision to consult separately with parties to get the peace deal back on track.
In throwing this issue to all the stakeholders and the primary parties to the agreement, to the peace agreement, then it is hoped that we could get somewhere.
And soldiers leave the army because they haven't been paid in months and must find a way to take care of their families.
I leave the family alone. There is a big problem in my family here. There is no for me that time to come and visit your family. Because here in Juba here, my families have a lot of problem. Even my wife is taken by somebody.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Former political detainees say they welcome IGAD's decision to consult with various South Sudanese parties in an effort to revitalize the 2015 peace agreement. SPLM-IO Taban Dengai's faction said last week it wants to be consulted together with the other partners of the Transitional Government of National Unity. But the former detainees say they want to be consulted separately. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
John Luke Jock, spokesperson for the former detainees, says his group does not think the peace deal has collapsed, but the group also says it obviously has not been fully implemented either, leading to prolonged insecurity and economic instability across the country. Jock, who serves as the Minister of Transport in the government, says his group believes that IGAD's decision to consult widely with the all South Sudanese groups will improve efforts to implement the peace deal.
In throwing this issue to all the stakeholders and the primary parties to the agreement, to the peace agreement, then it is hoped that we could get somewhere. The mere fact of bringing all these people around the table, I think it's positive initiative.
Jock says even though the deadline for full implementation is about to expire, not one single chapter in the agreement has been fully implemented. For example, Jock says Chapter 2 of the agreement, which specifies transitional security arrangements, is not being implemented. And he says Chapter 1 of the agreement, which deals with the specifics of the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity, has yet to be implemented fully. He notes that since President Salva Kiir sacked Cyrino Hiteng as Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister, no replacement has been announced. In addition, Mr. Kiir has yet to appoint one member of the former detainees to parliament as stipulated in the agreement. Consequently, 399 lawmakers are serving in parliament as opposed to the 400 stipulated in the agreement. Jock says some leaders in the transitional government lack the political will to implement the agreement.
What binds all of us together is the agreement that has been signed. It is its implementation, despite the challenges that it faces today, that must be the starting point.
Jock acknowledges fighting still continues in several parts of the country. The former detainees also think the absence in government of former First Vice President Riek Machar, a key signatory of the deal, affects the deal's implementation. Jock says IGAD mediators must include Machar and all the other armed groups in any effort to revitalize the peace agreement if they expect to restore peace across South Sudan.
The people who are shooting these days in parts of South Sudan claim to be loyal to Riek Machar. And that by itself is not even allowing the implementation of the permanent ceasefire. I think the fact that he has people who still think they are his supporters and who are armed, that constitutes a problem. It constitutes a problem because you cannot wish that away if there are still people who are fighting. Those guns must be silenced.
JOC disputes a statement released last week by Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro indicating all partners of the transitional government, including former detainees and heads of other political parties, want to be consulted together by IGAD mediators. JOC says the former detainees want to be consulted as a separate party, and if any joint consultative process is to be done, it must first be agreed in a legally constituted meeting by the parties. Lomuro's statement says IGAD's decision to separately consult the parties to the agreement, quote, implies that the transitional government of national unity does not exist and that the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan is indeed dead, end of quote. IGAD officials have already consulted some of the parties, including Riek Machar, who remains under house arrest in South Africa. The officials are expected to arrive in Juba for further consultations on Friday. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some South Sudanese soldiers in Juba are starting small businesses to make ends meet since they have not been paid in 6 months. Unlike in the past when they were combatants and received a meager salary, they now earn enough money to take care of their families. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
One soldier who deserted the army and works as a stonemason says he typically brings home 15,000 South Sudanese pounds per week compared to the 1,600 South Sudanese pounds he earned per month as a soldier. 38-year-old John Lokulang says he served in the military for 7 years before deserting in 2008 when he graduated from a training unit for SPLA soldiers in the border town of Nimule. Lokulang expected to receive a certificate to train new military recruits. When that didn't happen, a demoralized Lokulang deserted the army, saying the salary he received was not enough to feed his family anyway. Lokulang now lives near Jebel Kujur, a rocky mountainous area southwest of Juba. Speaking in Arabic, Lokulang says he breaks the rock into gravel and then sells the gravel.
When I was still in the military, I did not know how to break stones, work which requires a lot of energy. Above all, I was unable to carry out my responsibility as a family head. That is why I have now become an expert in breaking stones.
Lokulang says his customers buy stones to construct houses. He usually sells a truckload of stones at 7,000 South Sudanese pounds, or about $40.
This work of stones, if you work hard for a month, you can earn between 20,000 and 30,000 South Sudanese pounds. If you work less, you also get little money.
The money Lokulang earns is equivalent to between $105 and $150 a month. Lokulang says ever since he left the military, his life has improved. He buys food for his family and pays his school fees for his 3 children, and has money left over to buy new quarrying tools like a large hammer. Peter Lomura, another ex-soldier, served in the SPLA military intelligence. Lomura says he deserted the army last year at the rank of first lieutenant, in part because of the meager salary he received, but also because military officials denied him an opportunity to visit his family in Juba.
I have like 4 years or 3 years in Malakal. I leave the family alone. There is a big problem in my family here. There is no for me that time to come and visit your family. Because here in Juba here, my family is have a lot of problem. Even my wife is taken by somebody. Is pregnant by somebody. That's why I choose to leave the army.
Lomura says while serving in the army in Malakal, he was trained as a nurse. He says he decided to make use of his nursing skills and now works at a private health clinic in Juba.
The money I get in the army and the money I get in the nursing, there is no difference. But I am closer with my family and in my wife and my children.
An SPLA soldier who prefers to be identified only as Sergeant William for fear of retribution says he jungles work between his private business and his responsibilities as a soldier to make ends meet. William runs a retail shop in the Buaba market in Juba's Gudele neighborhood, where he sells basic food items. Speaking in Arabic, William cannot imagine deserting the military after serving for so many years.
I have not left the army, but because I cannot meet the demands of my children and my wife, I decided to enter the market and have seen the difference. Before, I used to go on loans with people, but now people are the ones coming to ask for loans from me.
On good days, William says he earns about 2,200 South Sudanese pounds, which is equivalent to about $12. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudanese refugees in Uganda's northern district of Adjumani say they are eager to enter the labor market after the NGO Caritas has vowed to support the refugees as they set up small businesses to become self-reliant. Caritas, the humanitarian arm of the Catholic Church, made the pledge as dozens of South Sudanese refugees completed vocational training courses in Adjumani. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Adjumani.
Some 190 students from settlements in Adjumani district graduated Friday after completing 3 or 4 month courses in catering, tailoring, carpentry, building, hairdressing, and other vocations at the Adjumani-based Junior Express Vocational Training School. Caritas, the Danish Refugee Council, and other NGOs sponsored the refugees along with some youth from the refugee hosting communities. Speaking at an event marking the occasion, Caritas representative Christine Bayoa said the Catholic charity will provide some money and tools to enable the refugees to start small businesses.
1 month from now, we shall give out your startup capitals and your startup kits.
David Lemmy, a South Sudanese from the Maji camp, says since fleeing conflict in his country more than a year ago, he has dreamed of setting up a business so he does not have to rely as much on handouts from humanitarian agencies to take care of his family. Lemmy says now that he has finished his course in metal fabrication, he believes his dream can come true.
If the NGOs like Caritas who sponsor us to give us at least a capital for us to start our business, it will be possible.
Lemmy says as efforts to preserve the environment increase and the Ugandan government discourages logging, people are increasingly resorting to metals for items that used to be made from wood.
In a few time to come, everyone want to fabricate his houses, the windows, the doors, and let me say, the bed, all with using metal. That's why it led me to choose metal fabrication generally.
Nathalie Mazira, another South Sudanese refugee from Mongola camp who took a course in tailoring, says because of the stiff competition in her line of work, she has no plans to immediately set up her own business. Instead, she says she plans to pick up more sewing techniques by practicing.
After this, I'll just struggle to gain the skills that I've not gained from this school. And then I'll see what to do. Of course, they have told us that they will be giving us the startup kits.
Mazira says she is now able to sew dresses, shirts, and trousers. She says she would have learned more complicated patterns for clothing if the course was longer.
The period of time that was given to us is so less. As a tailor has to take 3 years. A real tailor has to take 3 years to achieve what she or he expects.
Despite the relatively short time the students spent at the school, school principal Joseph Lacong says instruction was not limited to the various specialized courses. Lacong says students also studied business management, which he says those who wish to set up their own small businesses will find useful.
Instructors can only do small examples, but when they go there, they find themselves doing the real job and doing it in a good job situation.
Lacong agrees the courses should be extended beyond the current 3 to 4 months the school offers. Bayua says Caritas is taking that under consideration. At the ceremony, students displayed items they made, including clothes and cakes. The Danish Refugee Council and Caritas say the school will continue next year. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. How will U.S. lifting of sanctions on Sudan affect ordinary Sudanese citizens? Find out when we come back.
South Sudanese in the diaspora have mixed reactions about what is happening in their country. This week, South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza engages the diaspora in a spirited discussion about what South Sudanese should do to bring peace in their country.
Unity is possible when we stop the hate.
What are we not doing to bring peace to our country?
The voices of the diaspora on ending the conflict in South Sudan. This week on South Sudan in Focus.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What stresses you out?
When I have so much to do and I end up procrastinating and leave everything the last minute, I end up being stressed out.
The economy that is really going to its end, we feel like we are finished. The economy is terrible and it's finishing me, it's stressing me.
I get stressed when I don't get my financial needs met.
Insecurity that we are facing here and there.
Too much work stresses me out, and then sometimes boredom stresses me out.
Currently, I study 9 hours in a day, and that stresses me out.
When I have a lot of work in front of me, and also there is someone need also to disturbing me, telling me something also to be added, you know, I feel more stressed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese in the diaspora have mixed reactions about the role of the international community in ending violence in South Sudan. Community leaders, activists in the United States say while they appreciate the role played by the international community in helping South Sudanese, they believe the solution to South Sudan's conflict lies in the hands of South Sudanese. My colleague John Tanza talks to people in the diaspora again on the contributions of the international community in ending the conflict.
My name is Hakim Alfred Lano. I am a senior software engineer with the Toro Company. I've been living in Minnesota for 23 years. The government has the responsibility of making sure that each and every person in the southern Sudan is very peaceful, he has that peace, and he has a security. Therefore, when that security is granted to me, and I have the right to contribute also ideas for the development of the country and for the peaceful coexistence of everybody. But like, for example, the freedom of speech that individual in southern Sudan is supposed to have. That freedom of speech is not there for us to advocate as to how the government is supposed to protect all of us and how the government is supposed to maintain peace. The people in the southern Sudan, they are very simple people. What they only need is very simple things. They need security, they need food on the table that they can put, and they need to make sure that when they're sick, they can get treatment, and they want their kids to go to schools. These are basic things, basic services that they need. If these services can be provided almost to everybody, I don't think there will be problem there in our country.
Just Sarah, do you agree with Hakim?
I agree, definitely I agree with Hakim, and especially the part that peaceful coexistence or peace, people need.
But how can we coexist peacefully, Sarah? Let me take on both of you and Hakim. How are we going to coexist peacefully when we are living in a polarized situation where ethnicity is the rule of the game?
And that's why some people at the end resort to violence. And I believe we cannot face violence by violence. But the situation has pushed people to the edge. If we look at the SPLM, the makeup is dominated by one tribe. The army has been a majority, one tribe. The government is supposed to have those to change all of that. Unfortunately, our government is more tribal, and that's what people want to change. And as Galwak mentioned earlier, the peace agreement of 2015 would have solved a lot of the problem if we followed it by book and spirit. Unfortunately, a tribal game is dominating everything. And this is the reality. And that's why many people ended up taking guns.
Jacob Atem, your take on this. Do you agree with Sarah that tribalism is to blame? Because Hakim is blaming SPLM. Sarah is blaming tribalism. Do you agree with these two panelists?
Well, you know, to a certain extent, but my mind is not into this blame game. Yes, we can blame it on tribe, we can blame it on the SPLM. But back to what I was saying, how can we stop and silence the guns in order for this vulnerable population to have peace of mind? You have to go back to how the SPLM was structured. I visited a couple of years ago to South Sudan, and I actually read their constitution. And I said, you know what? There will be a civil war in this country. Think about it. Whoever was the SPLM, and we are part of them indirectly, okay, give all the power to the president. How can you give all the powers to one person? The president is the president of the SPLM party, and the president is the president of the whole country. Right there is the problem.
Those are members of the South Sudan diaspora talking about how to end the conflict in South Sudan. Tomorrow, my colleague John Tanza talks to diaspora leaders about the role of leaders in search of peace for South Sudan. A Sudanese human rights lawyer and spokesperson for the opposition Communist Party in Sudan says the lifting of U.S. sanctions on his country will have little impact on the lives of ordinary Sudanese unless there's total peace across country and corrupt government officials are punished. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Nairobi.
Saleh Mahmoud says the lifting of U.S. sanctions on Sudan will have great benefits for the government and Sudanese businessmen with close ties to the government. But he says it's not clear whether ordinary people in Sudan will reap the benefit.
The lifting is benefiting a sector that is very much related to the business and status of officials in the government. They will benefit from it, definitely. But it will never immediately change the lives of the citizens.
In order to relieve the suffering of ordinary Sudanese, the government must make sweeping changes in its policies and fight systematic corruption.
The crisis has a political dimension. It's not only economically, which elements very much affecting the lives of the people. The number one element is corruption itself.
Mahmoud says, above all, the government needs to end the wars in Darfur, South Kordofan and Blue Nile states, which he says are draining the national budget and perpetuating human rights violations against civilians.
Unless war is stopped in Darfur, Blue Nile and South Kordofan, I think human rights situation will never improve. Because it is always war crimes against humanity, and still we have the pending genocide of Darfur.
Khartoum-based political commentator Ismail Ibrahim agrees.
That is the most important thing, that you need to end the war, whether in Blue Nile or in Southern Kordofan or in Darfur. You know, you need a comprehensive political dialogue where you can get on board all the opposition.
Ibrahim says the lifting of U.S. sanctions creates a conducive environment for the government to move the country in the right direction. But Ibrahim says unless the government of President Omar al-Bashir stops the wars and carries out significant political reforms, the lifting of sanctions will not benefit ordinary Sudanese.
It depends on the government's willingness and ability to formulate and execute sound policies, particularly in the area of good governance, you know, where you have accountability, you have transparency, you have a good combating of corruption.
Ibrahim says the government must also allow more political and civil freedoms in the country. Despite the lifting of decades-long sanctions on Sudan, the country still remains on the list of state sponsors of terrorism. President Bashir was indicted years ago by the International Criminal Court on charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity said to be committed during the fighting in the Darfur region. He has yet to face those charges in The Hague. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Nairobi.
former Ugandan presidential candidate, Dr. Kizza Besigye, of the main opposition forum for democratic change, says the situation in Uganda today is no different from what it's been for the past 55 years. Dr. Besigye tells VOA's James Buddy, the country is insecure today because the military is used for regime preservation rather than protecting the public.
Within 55 years, all people who have led our country have done so with the use of guns. The current leader, Mr. Museveni, came into office nearly 32 years ago after a five-year bitter war that consumed more than 500,000 people. And so political instability has been a constant feature of Uganda's 55 years. The independence constitution was violently overthrown in 1966 when the military attacked the Kingdom of Buganda. At that time, the president of the country was the King of Buganda.
Dr. Besigye, let me say that President Yoweri Museveni has said that people like you who criticized his administration are misinformed because he says that Uganda has never had peace than it has had under his leadership.
Of course, Mr. Museveni is entitled to say whatever he wants, but the reality has to be taken away. I'm sure if you talk to him, he will not contest the massive unemployment. The massive poverty, lack of security is not the absence of the war. It is the presence of justice. It is the presence of social services. It is the presence of social security. When there is no social security, as there isn't in our country, we cannot talk about security. And indeed, as we celebrate or as we mark 55 years, insecurity is clearly rampant. And that is because the security, rather than concentrating on ensuring that the security for people and their property, the preoccupation of security institutions is in the direction of the regime survival, regime protection.
You were talking a while ago, Dr. Besigye, about the debate in Parliament over the removal of presidential age limits. Are you the opponents losing the battle?
Well, James, as I have just told you, the lasting challenge for our country since independence is orderly transfer of power. The political upheaval, the economic challenges we have are subsequent upon the political mismanagement. The fundamental problem of our country is the political mismanagement.
That's Dr. Kizza Besigye of the main opposition forum for democratic change in Uganda. The former presidential candidate was speaking to VOA's James Buddy. And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song original by Fally Ipupa.
Original. Hustler. Hustler. Trop d'avance comme Rolls-Royce sur moto. Fally Ipupa handicap la merveille. Original. Original. Listen, écoutez bien. Get up and dance, dance.
Africa, viens danser. Europa, viens danser. America, let's dance. Sud America, como estás? Asia, I know. Hip bazooka, haya.
We've been listening to Fally Ipupa with the song Original. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to know what you think about our show. You can contact us on the web at SouthSudan@voanews.com or check us out on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh,